Are you insane?
They are insane!
Sensor beam on. Sensor beam on, sir. Deflectors full intensity. Deflectors full intensity.
My God. Shields! Shields!
Fluctuating. Shields down to 30%.
Weapon status.
Dan, follow them into the nebula, sir. Shields would be useless.
This is Captain Catherine Janeway. We're not here to fight you.
Shields at 52%.
Stand. 9 and 10. 7 confirmed dead. Shields at 86%. Shields at 82%.
My God, I love George Takei. His reading of that, shields, shields. It's so great. We should have, I need to like separate the saucer section, do just like an all day Takei, and just talk about him. Now, I met him once when we were watching the 25th anniversary of The Wrath of Khan at the Egyptian Theater. He was at a restaurant called The Pig and Whistle right next to it on Hollywood Boulevard. I'll tell you all about that some other day. But for right now, I have a bit of a rant, as I am wont to do recently, and this was after the last episode of Discovery. Now, I'm trying to corral the fools, the Doctor and Jason, to do a final sort of wrap-up of the episode and of the season of Discovery. I'm also trying to get my son, Kiernan, it's his birthday today, that's, you know, kind of a temporal thing, but happy birthday, Kiernan, to do a wrap-up on the Orville, which we watched. Sometimes under duress and protest, but I want to cap off those two. But I was watching the finale of Discovery, and that little clip that you heard, the last clip you heard, is what really kind of got under my skin a little bit. And I wish I could, I don't know if I can't play it for you again. I've got some interesting audio issues, but we start off on, I believe it's the Enterprise, and they're saying Shields at 85%. And then we quickly cut directly over to Discovery, Shields at 82%. And I just stopped there and I thought, what the hell does that even mean? What do Shields even mean? Because if you watch that episode and most of Discovery, both those ships are not at 82 and 85% Shields, respectively. They are getting their asses kicked. I mean, it is as though, like, the airbags have deployed, the windshields are cracked, the radio is on fire, and like, half of the engine is now in the backseat of the car. If you look at those, in both sets, there are sparks flying everywhere, there's little fires, you know, there's smoke, there's this terrible debris that they've decided to come up with. And if you check out our Facebook page, or I just want to talk about Facebook page, I made a little GIF showing all this weird Star Trek Discovery rubble. I guess 10 years before Enterprise, whenever there was a destructive moment in the show, these little, like, they look at volcanic rocks, these like spongy rocks will explode from any control panel or any wall. There's just rocks everywhere. There's rocks all over the ship. And this is because the shields are at 82 and 85% efficiency. That should be good, right? I mean, we should hope that if something is at 82 to 85%, now right now, my battery on my MacBook is at 82%. I can look at this right now. It's at 82%. It's actually fortuitous. 82% listeners. So, but in doing so, my laptop is not on fire. There are not flames rising from it. And me and my bird, if you hear this every once, I have my bird Lucky. It's actually my kid's bird, not the one that has the birthday. He's sitting on my shoulder, so he keeps quiet. We're here. There's nobody else in the house right now, just me and the bird. And it's kind of nice. But we are sitting here, and my laptop is perfectly fine because it's doing what it's supposed to do with this battery power. It's now at 81%. Battery power at 81%. Nothing bad is happening. We all know what happens at like 7%. You get this little notification. We all know what happens with your phone when it goes on to 20%, 10%, 5%. It just stops, right? But not with Shields. Shields are terrible in the Star Trek world. Shields are antithetical to what you would think they would do, which would be to, and I don't mean to be eponymous here, but to shield you from anything bad happening to the ship. And yet, especially on Discovery, just things go to hell so quickly. I mean, they're going to fix this. By the time they come to TOS and TNG, SHIELD's going to be a lot stronger. But for Discovery, they're not good. But as I was listening to those two nonsensical numbers, 85 and 82% of SHIELDs, I thought, you know, Star Trek really leans into that a lot. So I want to do a little mini rant here about SHIELDs and the uses and the abuses of SHIELDs in Star Trek. Because this is a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek. I actually did a little bit of, I didn't do that much work. SHIELDs are nothing new, right? I mean, like, SHIELDs have been in a lot of television shows, you know, before, you know, during and after Star Trek. But Star Trek really, really leans into them. I remember reading the book Dune by Frank Herbert, and it's a great book, and the movie's okay. David Lynch, Patrick Stewart's in it. You can see him in there. Is he Gurney Halsek? I can't remember who he is. Anyways, but they have shields there too. But here's the caveat to that, is that if you fire energy weapons at a shield, they have these personal shields, it's like an atomic bomb goes off. It is some rough stuff with these shields. Like, even a personal shield, you shoot any sort of energy weapon at it, boom, everything goes away. But what this allowed for was interesting hand-to-hand combat and, like, shooting these weird bullets, which would, like, slowly enter the shield and then, like, shoot you in the head. Really cool. Cool idea. I liked it. For Star Trek, originally, in 1966, SHIELDS was an elegant and cheap solution to the idea of what happens when you fight another spaceship out in outer space. Now, if you're fighting a naval ship in an actual battle, like, you know, World War II or on the high seas in the, you know, 1776, those ships, they slug it out and they just get destroyed or don't get destroyed. You know, sometimes a single torpedo takes out a ship. Sometimes a cannonball can take out the mast or can you know, strike a hole in it. What is it, the Merrimack and the Monitor, the famous, the two ironside ships that fought in the Civil War. Basically, they're iron-plated, and because the technology hadn't caught up with them, they basically had shields. Those two, they just shot at each other all night, and nothing happened. They just kind of sailed away. And I think one of them got, like, engine problems, and they had to scuttle the ship or something like that. But it wasn't as a result of them firing cannonballs at each other. In fact, the armor plating worked, and so then you had to develop new weapons. Shields, though, solved the problem. Now, with Star Trek with Gene Roddenberry, he had a couple of problems. First of all, how do I get these crew members down to a planet every week with this giant, crazy-looking, non-aerodynamic, non-structurally sound ship to land on a planet? It's a beautiful ship. The Enterprise, the original Enterprise, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous-looking ship. Weird to land on a planet. And I don't think he ever even considered that. And so his beautiful solution was a transporter beam, a teleportation. Great. We'll just beam you down. Now, that costs money, too. That costs money as well. But in the long run, if you can kind of economize that one effect, it is going to be much better than having to see the ship land every single week on a planet. One of my other favorite shows. And actually, you can also look at a comparable of Lost in Space, which came out a couple years before that. And they would have to have the Jupiter 2 land on a various planet every week. Space 1999, I was going to say, one of my favorite guilty pleasures. It's a great, you know, sci-fi British show, British-American show back in the early 70s, I want to say. They had to land their ships every single week on a different planet. And so you had to build that model, and then you had to land that little eagle on a different planet every single week and had it fly around in any sort of space battles. And they didn't have shields. So every time a ship got hit, boom, it was gone. So in essence, they take care of a couple problems with the transporter in that you don't have to land the ship. You don't have to have, you know, landing struts. You just beam people down. And with space bottles, 99 space bottles on a wall, it was a similar situation. Because models were expensive as well. And as we talked about a couple episodes ago in the Doomsday Machine, they were so expensive that they couldn't destroy or damage their original one. And in the Doomsday Machine, they actually bought a model, a store-bought model, one sitting on a shelf somewhere in a hobby store, probably somewhere in Glendale. They bought it, and then of the Enterprise, and then they distressed it to look like the Constitution. So, so amazing. But for the rest of the time, and especially in the beginning, how do you solve the problem of having ship combat? Well, you have energy shields. Energy shields solve that problem because suddenly you have shields are holding, shields are weakening, shields are down. There's damage on this deck because shields are down. Now you can have ships fire at each other and understand that the Enterprise can take some sort of internal damage, but the external damage, as the ship pulls away, and as you see, you know, directed by Mark Daniels or Joseph Peabody or whoever it is, it's going to be the same shot. They can reuse that shot of the Enterprise pulling away because it is not as expensive. It's a good solution. It's a good, smart solution. And, you know, only a couple times, I think the other time was with the Tholian Web, do we ever actually see, another ship, another Enterprise Constitution class distressed again and destroyed because it was an expensive thing. Now, certainly they used shields effectively in different circumstances. I can think of the Balance of Terror, where they're evading the Romulan giant photon torpedo thing, and they have to go to warp 9 backwards to get away from it, and then it hits and drains all of their shields as fast as they're going to get away from that. And that informs the audience very effectively, like, all of our best technology, everything we have, can barely survive that. We can't survive another hit. Good, we got it. It's a torpedo. We understand. The Next Generation also use shields in that capacity. Now, this is where we start having the numerical shield degradation starting. And I'll have to go back, obviously I've done so much research on this, but I'll have to go back and see if there was ever a time in the original series where they ticked off the shield strength in percentages. But certainly TNG fell in love with numbers, number 47, of course, but also they fell in love just with numbers in general, numbers and technical aspects of it. And so, of course, why not apply that to shields? Shields are down to 40%. Shields are down to 20%. And again, it was for the same reason that they had these shields, is because it was expensive. It was expensive to show ships taking damage. I mean, we remember, what is it, The one where the ship blows up over and over again. I can't remember it. But they only blew up the ship a couple of times. Do we remember in Generations when they reused the Klingon Bird of Prey from, I think it was, I can't remember which episode that was. In The Next Generation, they reused that in Generations to blow it up as Lursa and Bator's ship. What? Why are you reusing that? You're a big multi-million-dollar movie. Because this stuff is expensive. And so you can't fault them that much if they're going to spend a whole bunch of their budget in actors and in special effects internally. But if you're going to blow up a ship, let's really make it count. And their big budget in Generations was going to be to blow up the Enterprise. Well, actually, to have it crash. Now, the interesting thing about shields, as I want to continue my thoughts on shields just for a little bit, is that as a testament to the fact that shields are basically a budget-saving convenience for these two shows specifically, is that in almost no instance are there ever any personal shields in Star Trek. And it begs the question, why? If you can have a personal phaser, why can't you have a personal shield? Wouldn't that be so much more useful if you could walk into a situation that somehow kept away any sort of energy devices or any sort of contaminants or whatever it is away from you? And the reason for that is that that would become expensive again, because you'd not only have to animate a phaser blast, but also a shield blast, but it also took away some of the danger of traveling in a solo capacity away from the ship. When we have ships battling each other, it's hard for an audience to understand exactly what the stakes are. Now, certainly some of the movies and some of the TV shows showed some of that damage on the ship, and sometimes later on off the ship, on the external parts of it. But it's hard to understand. So they had this kind of numerical countdown. But when it's a person firing something at another person on a planet, we all understand that. And we understand what the consequences are. We have, unfortunately, guns in our 21st century. And we know what happens with those things. So there's no need, first of all, from a budgetary standpoint, but also from a narrative standpoint, to get to add those shields. but I think predominantly for a budgetary standpoint. In that movie Dune, they did have those shields. They showed them once in a while, and they had to, like, I think, hand animate them around Patrick Stewart, and it was just, it was a mess. It was, I mean, it looked okay, but in the end, it just wasn't convincing enough to be something that, you know, you'd want to have everyone wearing. All right, I'm taking a small break here because this bird literally just pooped on my hand. Oh my God, it's terrible. Hold on 1 second.
You know, normally I should stop.
But I thought you'd like to listen to the bird. And I wish I had a shield around my hand because I was making a good point there. All right. So TOS, TNG, they needed shields, and that's fine. And if TNG wanted to put in a bunch of numbers into it, you know, shields down 30%, one of those clips you heard when shields are down 30%, that was in the last episode. That is an all good thing. So at least by the end of the series, they were down with the percentiles. But right around the end of TNG, in the beginning of Deep Space Nine, something happened. A technological advancement took place. It started off in Babylon 5, one of my favorite shows, with the use of computer-generated chips. And it became revolutionary. And the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine used models, but then eventually they started using digital chips as well. And now suddenly, you had this interesting scenario where shields were actually counterproductive to showing the action and the excitement of your spaceship show, because now you could blow up your ships. Your ships could explode in huge fireballs with giant pieces of metal being thrown right at the camera. And you could do it over and over again, all sorts of different takes, because the computer would just keep on rendering it in whatever fashion you wanted to. You could have dozens of ships, hundreds, thousands. By the time the Dominion War was almost over, there was screens just filled with hundreds of ships, just duking it out. And it was thrilling and exciting. And suddenly shields weren't that useful, at least from that component. In the Dominion War, man, you wanted to see those ships. And man, there was a huge, like, swath of destruction in some of those giant Dominion battles, weren't there? I mean, you know, capital ships, you know, Constitution class, Galaxy class, they were just being Miranda class, they were just being wiped out left and right, one shot. It almost felt as though it was single person combat again on a planet. You get hit once, you're done. Shields had been made irrelevant. In fact, they even had the Breen, which came up, which eliminated shields, like took away your shields. But while you would think that at this point in time, the makers of Star Trek could say, oh, let's ease off on, you know, ticking away how much or little shields we have. In fact, it still persisted. You know, some of those clips you hear from Voyager, from Deep Space Nine. Well, actually, there's one from Deep Space Nine. But into Voyager, through Deep Space Nine, into Voyager, into Enterprise, into the movies. One of those clips is from Star Trek Nemesis. They kept it up. And in fact, they've even become more granular. You start hearing not just percentages in the tens, but to the ones. Like, for example, I'm at 72% battery power. Laptop's still not on fire, but I'm at 72%, so I'm keeping an eye on that. It became more granular, as though somehow it was even more interesting to tell you that it's at 72%. What does that mean to someone? What does 72% mean? The ship still rocked back and forth, lights still flickered, sometimes sparks came out of a control panel. 72% is not that good. I'll take my 72% laptop right now over 72% of a Constitution class starship. Why did they keep that there? Why is it still here in 2019 Discovery? You know the answer probably. I'm leading up to this because I am a cranky curmudgeon. And the reason is because it's for narrative convenience. It, in the original series, in the Next Generation, by ticking off the shield count from 100% to 90 to 80, it became a sort of countdown. It told the audience that things are getting more and more serious. These might be deflector screens, as they were originally called, but in fact, they are enhancing the energy in the show, the tension in the show. And so the writers continued to lean on that as we would check into a ship. Even when it wasn't like the show wasn't about a space battle. You know, if a ship is firing upon the Enterprise or Discovery, like, oh, shields are down to 87% or 91%. That doesn't mean anything. But it does, all it does is it's this little meter for you, the audience member, to say, oh, things are a little more intense. Without having to show anything else, without having to have any sort of expensive CGI or any sort of consequences from that, we know that things are a little more intense. I mean, if I'm going to continue like sort of the weapon stuff, let's say it's a Wild West, and let's say a guy walks in to a saloon and he's got a sidearm. That's maybe 90% of your shields you still have left. Now, if he turns to you and kind of flashes, maybe it's 50%. I know this is a weird analogy. I just came up with it. Maybe it doesn't work. I don't care. It's fine. But for the writers, it became a shortcut to telling you that things are becoming more dramatic. And I also want to point out that Enterprise did this as well. Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise, the NX-01, they didn't have shield. They had polarizing hulls. So there we go. Deep Space Nine had a blade of armor at times. It's the same thing. So I'm not just talking about, at that point in time, they had basically changed the nomenclature of it, but it was all the same, right? It was a way for a writer to check back in and say, shields are at blank percent, Captain. And then instantly we know what's going on. Now, that can be good sometimes. Sometimes it is like if you're away from the action on the bridge, doing something else, and you come back, it's a quick way to check in. My question to the writers and to you and to myself, is it always necessary? And then my bigger question, my bigger mind-bending question to you, the listener, and to me, and maybe to the writers, are shields still useful? I'm asking this, and so is my bird, because in the interim, since the advent of shields and the advent of CG, a lot of television shows and movies have chosen to not have shields on their spaceships. As I said, Babylon 5, their ships didn't have any sort of energy shields around them. So if you got hit by an energy weapon or by a projectile of some sort, you're in deep trouble. That damage is instantly registered on that ship. Sometimes, in fact, it's registered even more on the external ship than the internal, because Babylon 5 was on a limited budget as far as internally. So maybe you had a couple of sparks or maybe nothing in that bridge. But suddenly you understood because it became far more of a visceral experience. Same thing with Battlestar Galactica. Ronald Moore. I mean, he took his lessons from Deep Space Nine and Voyager and said, I don't think I want shields. I think I like it when ships take solid hits. And Battlestar Galactica, the large ship, and Pegasus, they took a lot of hits. Now, they had armor, that's for sure. But every time a missile hit those ships, it was registered in that ship. And that was damage. And you had damage control teams that had to go in there and seal off hull breaches and close bulkheads and put out fires. There are real consequences to it, as opposed to shields where there are no consequences. The Expanse, another one of my favorite new shows. If you get hit by one of these either energy weapons or most of them are projectiles, your ship is in big, big trouble. They shoot these rail guns at you. And I'm not advocating you watch these shows, but I'm making the example that many other shows have chosen now to move away from shields because it is a delaying tactic. At the end of the day, a shield, unless it is used for an intrinsically interesting use of and by itself, is nothing but a delaying tactic of the narrative. It stops and slows down the action. And my question is, in 2019, when you have a finite amount of episodes, you know, 14 for Discovery, you know, 10 for The Expanse, or any of these limited round of shows, why? Why even bother having shields? Why not use your CGI to show the destruction? Now, Discovery did with Enterprise. Let me say that they did have shields, and they were taking it down. It didn't stop a photon torpedo from lodging itself in the saucer section of the Enterprise, which makes me ask, why the hell do you have shields in the first place? The deflector screens, they deflected nothing. And then that photon torpedo went off. And the Enterprise had this huge amount of battle damage to it. That was great. Oh my God, it was so cool to see the Enterprise, the front of it, like carved out, like someone took a bite out of a cookie. A cookie. But my question again is, if we didn't have shields in the first place, wouldn't it be much more interesting from the get-go? Not get-go, get-go. How amazing would it be using all the CG technology to see the damage? Now, I know this, that episode was bananas because they decided to have 10,000 little fighter ships firing away. But so what? Hey, writers, let's back you into a corner. Every shot counts. What happens if Control turned off all your shields instead of just shooting one weird photon torpedo through your shields and blowing it up? What happens if the Enterprise took damage right off the bat? Is this a new principle for Star Trek? No, it's not. And in fact, a lot of their best episodes came when there were no shields. You know where I'm going with this. I played the clip earlier. Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. There were never any shields in those fights. And those are some of the best Star Trek fights, bar none. First of all, Khan turns off the shields. And then he disables them. Kirk returns the favor and kind of disables them. And then they go in the Mutar Nebula, where shields, our shields, would be useless. Yakum. Yakum, I shall avenge you. It's great, because then every single shot counts. Think about Wrath of Khan, if Khan starts his attack and it's like, oh my God, shields are at 40%. Well, let's go over here. Shields are at 20%. Well, let's do this. Shields at 9%, Captain. Shields are down. And now they'll have some destruction. No. That show starts off by inflicting huge amounts of damage on the Enterprise. It seems scary, I know. Oh my God, what are we going to do? But what did they do? They became smart. They became desperate. And that's the stuff that's compelling to us. I don't know if Star Trek needs shields. Star Wars has shields now. In the last movie, they had shields. And I think that was another delaying tactic. Like, who cares? Oh, the shields are going to give up. You know, we're going to run out of fuel and then the shields will be dead. What? Just get to it. Let's just go, man. I mean, you have all the money in the world for these shows, for Discovery and for Star Wars. And just let's get to the next interesting thing. Don't put a pin in something with a shield. Because then that's just a stalling technique. And then eventually you're going to have to pay the price. You're going to have to pay the Piper at some point in time. Not Doc Piper. Was that his name? It was like the first or second doctor in the show. Played by Paul Fix, I think. If you're going to do something, let's go ahead and do it. I understand in the past when it was expensive, but you've got a whole bank of computers sitting there which can render anything you want. Go ahead and make it count. Go ahead and take that leap and see what happens. And you know what? There may be sometimes if you don't have shields, what would happen if two ships are staring across each other with no shields? Boy, that gets a lot scarier, doesn't it? You know, when Klingons and humans face off each other in these situations or whoever's Romulans, there's always a little bit of breathing room, right? Like, boy, if they start firing, our shields will go down to 89%. And then to 75%. And then to 45%. And then their shields will go down as well. See, who cares about that? What we care about is when two foes face each other and sudden death could be one move away. That's when things get interesting. At least to me. I have a couple more. In addition to the Wrath of Khan, I also want to point out Star Trek 3. When their shields burn out suddenly and they have to improvise and blow up the ship. Spoiler. I like it in Q-Who, Next Generation, when the Borg find a way to disable the Next Generation's shields. Now, that's an interesting way to take the shields and say, we're taking them away from you. You suddenly have an enemy who is so powerful they can destroy your shields with one shot. In Generations, even though I just, you know, besmirched that, Lursa and Bator found a way to get through the shields using a shield frequency seen by Geordi. Love those guys. We should find them, put them on the podcast, right? But then once the shields were down, that's when things got interesting, wasn't it? All of a sudden, the Enterprise is taking serious damage and has to ditch. These are most of the good episodes of Star Trek, so there is precedent for it. I don't know. Am I wrong on this? Maybe I am. Maybe people love Shields. Maybe I'm becoming more and more of a mind. And maybe this is the last bit I'll tell you, is that I was thinking about this. I was also thinking about, okay, so I'm irritated at Shields. Mike's irritated about something. What a wonder is that. As I get older, do I have Shields? And for those of you who don't remember, as we're like 135 episodes into this, this podcast was started not with a bird on my shoulder, but under the premise that I was going through my midlife crisis, and I didn't quite know what to do with my life, so I placed it through the lens of Star Trek. And as I'm talking about Shields, and about being defensive, and about rejecting and pushing away things with energy, I ask myself, as I watch Discovery, as I hear about, you know, new shows, you know, Section 31, the new animated show, am I putting up my own personal shields? We all do this, right? But am I becoming more and more cranky because I'm afraid to let these things into me? You know, that wasn't a dramatic pause. The music just started on another clip. Am I someone who has now become afraid to take that internal emotional damage or allow new things into my life? I have a very personal relationship with Star Trek, and also one, a professional one now, where, you know, I have been up for a couple of jobs writing for Star Trek and I've not gotten them. And so I wonder on some aspects if my personal shields are up towards anything new about Star Trek. If I sit there and I try to find ways to push the new away, it's very possible. Now, as a whole, I really enjoyed season two better than season one of Discovery, but here I am complaining about Shields. So I still think overall, and in fact, if we combine those two techniques, yes, I should probably try and let new things into my life. Not take damage, but allow them in my life. And I also think Star Trek should get rid of Shields, because they're good enough now to just go ahead and let things in. Is that a good enough one? Is that a good enough tagline? I don't know. I don't know anymore. We need more guest stars. When I'm sitting here by myself with a bird, it becomes problematic, right? So, but I will thank you for listening to my rants. And for sticking around. And now we're kind of in the long, cold night of no more Star Trek for a while, or even no more Orville. What will we do? What will we do? It's weird that they put them against each other, isn't it? Maybe we'll talk about that, about the issues with that. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Please don't put up your shields when you listen to this podcast. Tell a friend. Leave a rating on iTunes. It actually helps us out a lot. But at the end of the day, at the end of the podcast, I tell you to lower your shields. We're at 61% power. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek.
Destruct sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
I meant to say that.